Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section A, for Friday, February 5th, 2020. Transportation. Craddock appointed to Energy Resources two other committees by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The Speaker of the Texas House has appointed State Rep. Tom Craddock to the Calendars, Energy Resources, and Land and Resource Management Committees. The announcement came Thursday as Speaker Dade Phelan released assignments to all members. In 2019, Craddock served as the chair of the Land and Resource Management Committee and on the Energy Resources Committee. The Land and Resource Management Committee has jurisdiction over all matters pertaining to the management of public lands, the power of eminent domain, including oil and gas pipelines, and the following state agencies: the School Land Board, the Board of Lease for University Lands, and the General Land Office. The House Energy Committee hears bills pertaining to the oil and gas industry, pipelines, electric utilities, and alternative energy resources. Craddock continues to be this committee's longest-serving member. The Midland Republican also was appointed to the Calendars Committee. The House Committee on Calendars is responsible for placing or not placing the bill on a calendar so that it may be ultimately voted on by the full House. Craddock is the representative of District 82, which includes Crane, Dawson, Martin, Midland, and Upton counties. He's been a member of the state legislature since 1969. Odessa Republican Brooks Landgraft was appointed to the following committees: Environmental Regulation, which he will chair, House Administration, Redistricting, and Transportation. Let the modernization of I-20 begin. An insider report by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Editor's note: a story on how the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance is approaching the legislative session is scheduled for the weekend edition. The potential decade-long transformation of Interstate 20 is underway. Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance Executive Director James Beauchamp told the Reporter Telegram that the state has determined the low bidder, or LET, for two projects related to the major artery that goes through the southern portions of Midland and Odessa: new interchanges at County Road 1250 and Midkiff Road in Midland, and construction has or will begin on both by the end of the month. The end result of all five parts of the I-20 rehab includes adding a lane each way, one-way frontage roads, improved locations for entrance and exit ramps, new interchanges and underpasses converted to overpasses at eight locations, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. The potential price tag was $830 million, according to Texas Department of Transportation officials last year. The new I-20 interchanges that kick off the transportation information were estimated to cost around $58 million. Another interchange at Cotton Flat Road, also in Midland County, is scheduled to start in May 2022. What is expected to follow, according to Beauchamp, is the addition of one travel lane eastbound and westbound on JBS Parkway in Odessa to east of State Highway 349 in Midland. The extra lanes and improved circulation of traffic will be benefit as volumes at peak locations in Midland have reached 70,000 vehicles per day. About a quarter are heavy trucks, and 67,000 vehicles per day, one-third are heavy trucks in Odessa. The cost of the addition of those lanes has been estimated at $340 million. TxDOT officials have previously stated that the part of the project could be led in 2022. Beauchamp said that the conversion of the frontage roads, current two-way, to one-way will happen after interchanges are completed and the additional main lines are built on the interstate. TxDOT officials have said at any given point, two lanes will be open in either direction during the entire process. TxDOT has a big job in front of them, says Beauchamp, who pointed to capacity and safety issues with the interstate from Big Spring to Monahans. Projects will help modernize I-20, including the addition of interchanges and the updating of others. TxDOT officials previously told the Reporter-Telegram that an additional $400 million is needed to fully fund the five I-20 projects through Midland and Ector counties. Beauchamp previously credited TxDOT engineer John Speed for listening to community concerns over costs, time, and addressing the actual needs and then incorporating the comments into a much better plan. If he had not been on the project, we would be seeing today would be just a $350 million project to convert frontage roads over the next 5 or 6 years. Midland Bucks trend with no weekly price increase, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Midland was one of two larger metropolitan areas in the state where the average price of gas did not increase this past week. AAA Texas reported the average in Midland stayed at $2.29 a gallon for regular unleaded. Of the 29 larger metropolitan areas that AAA Texas surveys, only Midland and El Paso did not show increases. The average in El Paso dropped 3 cents. That means a new Texas community took over as the most expensive for the average price of gas. It was Abilene, where the price of gas increased 18 cents over the week. Drivers in Abilene are paying $2.36 a gallon. Odessa and Midland are second and third with $2.32 and $2.29. El Paso and Texarkana are the other large communities in the state with an average higher than $2.20. Jenny Cudd, Eli Olorosa now face 5 charges. One is a felony charge of obstructing a congressional proceeding, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midlanders Jenny Cudd and Eli Olorosa have been indicted by a grand jury on 5 federal charges, according to court documents filed Wednesday. They're each facing a felony charge of obstructing a congressional proceeding, punishable by up to 20 years in prison, and 4 misdemeanors. Cudd and Rosa were each indicted on charges of obstruction of an official proceeding and aiding and abetting. This is a felony punishable by a fine up to 20 years in prison or both. The indictment alleges Cudd and Rosa obstructed an official proceeding before Congress by entering and remaining in the U.S. Capitol without the authority to do so and engaging in disruptive conduct. Entering and remaining in a restricted building on grounds, a misdemeanor punishable by a fine and up to 1 year in prison. Cudd and Rosa allegedly entered a restricted area of the Capitol building unlawfully, while then Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and former Vice President Mike Pence were temporarily visiting, according to the indictment. Disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, a misdemeanor punishable by a fine and up to 1 year in prison. The indictment alleges Cudd and Rosa allegedly engaged in disorderly conduct with the intent to disrupt government business and official functions. Disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, a misdemeanor punishable by a fine and up to 6 months in prison. Parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building, a misdemeanor punishable by a fine and up to 6 months in prison. Cudd and Rosa were arrested on January 13th for their participation in riots at the Capitol building and released on personal recognizance bonds that afternoon. A court hearing scheduled for Thursday was moved to a later date after the grand jury indictment was filed Wednesday. The case has now been assigned to Washington, District Judge Trevor N. McFadden.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, February 5th. Oil. Texas lost nearly 60,000 oil and gas jobs in 2020, by Paul Takashi, Houston Chronicle. Nearly 60,000 oil exploration and production jobs in Texas were lost in 2020, a staggering figure that underscores the deep industry wounds caused by the global pandemic and oil crash. Employment in Texas's oil drilling and extraction sector fell by more than a quarter as the coronavirus pandemic crushed demand for crude and petroleum products, forcing oil and gas companies to cut production and lay off thousands of workers. There are now about 150,000 upstream oil and gas workers in Texas, the fewest in more than 15 years. For comparison, the sector employed more than 228,000 workers in December 2018, just over 2 years ago, according to the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, a trade group. "The job loss is devastating," said Carr Ingham, the alliance's petroleum economist. In addition, wages were pushed down sharply for those who remained on oil and gas company payrolls. The combined effects of lost jobs and lower industry wages only served to worsen the effects of COVID on the statewide economy and on local and regional economies with strong ties to oil and gas production. Nationally, the oil and gas industry lost an estimated 107,000 jobs during the pandemic, according to global consulting firm Deloitte. The job losses came amid the sharpest drop in global crude demand in the shortest amount of time on record. Texas crude oil production hit a record 5.4 million barrels per day in March before it plunged by nearly 20% to around 4.3 million barrels a day by May. The number of drilling rigs in Texas plunged by more than 60% in 2020, dropping to 155 in December, the lowest level since oil field services giant Baker Hughes started tallying the weekly rig count in 1944. The Texas rig count bottomed out in August at 100 rigs. The number of drilling permits issued by the Texas Railroad Commission fell by nearly half to 6,295 in 2020, the lowest since at least the 1960s. A record low 251 permits were issued in May 2020. Texas oil and gas industry appears to be recovering after crude prices climbed back above $40 a barrel last summer and surged above $50 a barrel in January after the rollout of coronavirus vaccines. Since May, oil and gas companies in Texas have added back 407,000 barrels per day of crude production, ending 2020 at around 4.8 million barrels per day of production. Texas represents about 44% of the U.S. crude production. The job losses stemming from the pandemic appear to have bottomed out in August. An estimated 2,300 oil and gas jobs have been added in the last 4 months of 2020, according to Alliance. That the industry is adding jobs is encouraging, pointing to at least somewhat better times ahead in 2021, Ingham said. Odessa Church will be offering Ashes to Go by J.C. Lewis. On Ash Wednesday, February 17th, Connection Christian Church will be offering Ashes to Go for its sixth year, according to a press release. Connection Christian Church is part of a nationwide movement that has clergy and lay people visiting street corners, coffee shops, and college campuses to mark the foreheads of interested passers-by with ashes and invite them to receive a new start in their lives. In the Christian tradition, Ash Wednesday marks the start of the holy season of Lent, a time for preparation for the celebration of Easter. For centuries, Christians have received a cross of ashes at the beginning of the season as a reminder of God's forgiveness. Ashes to Go provides the opportunity to participate in that tradition for people who have lost their connection to a church, work during their church's services, or have never participated before. In Odessa, Connection Christian Church will have the following schedule for Ashes to Go: 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. at Stripes on Faudry Road and State Highway 191. 10 a.m. at Market Street on John Ben Shepherd Parkway. Noon at the corner of Tanglewood Lane and Penbrook Street. 6 p.m. in the west parking lot of Connection Christian Church during worship service. All coronavirus precautions will be taken and recipients are asked to wear masks. From the local section, vaccinations this week: Monday, 1,064. Tuesday, 1,012. Wednesday, 1,057. Total, 8,408. Vaccination volunteers. Volunteers are needed for the COVID-19 mass vaccination site. Those interested should email vaxvolunteers at MidlandHealth.org or call 432-312-0030. Please include your name, phone number, clinical, including credentials, or non-clinical, and day and time you're available over the next 6 weeks between the hours of 8:45 a.m. and 5 p.m.
The Opinion Page. An opinion extra from Ben Shapiro. It's tragic to see equality of rights abandoned for equity. President Joe Biden took office pledging a return to unity and decency. A new era of good feelings is at hand, and we were informed by both his administration and its sycophants in the media. A new world, a world of equity, is at hand. Equity, you see, is the word of the day, not equality. That would be a traditionally American concept. The Declaration of Independence declares that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution provides that all citizens must receive equal protection of the laws. Equality, in the traditional understanding, means something simple and easy to implement, the protection of rights of all individuals, along with the invasion of none of those rights. Equity means something different. The two words are separated by one syllable, but that syllable represents the difference between justice and injustice, rights and infringements, individualism and tribalism. Equity, in the common political parlance, means that each group should receive the same outcome as every other group. Ibram X. Kendi, the chief expositor of the new democratic racial equity theory, explains that racial equity is when two or more racial groups are standing on a relatively equal footing. Because race is a social construct, says Kendi, the chief indicator that two races are on unequal footing can be found not in proof of differential treatment by race, but in differential outcome by race. To prove racial inequity, therefore, one need not show animus or discriminatory policy. All one must show is unequal outcome. Kendi explains in his massive bestseller, How to Be an Anti-Racist. A racist policy is any measure that produces or sustains racial inequity between racial groups. An anti-racist policy is any measure that produces or sustains racial equity between racial groups. And, says Kendi, there is no such thing as a non-racist or race-neutral policy. All policies either forward equity or oppose it. Any policy not explicitly designed to rectify unequal outcome is therefore racist. This philosophy is both idiotic and perverse. It's idiotic because all human groupings, literally all of them, will result in differential outcomes. Draw a line down the middle of any room in random fashion, and the result will be unequal income distribution, criminal records, educational histories. When culture takes a hand, disparities can be more deeply rooted than random chance. Discrimination would still not be the cause of such disparity. As a basic logical matter, discrimination is not the cause of all disparity. This philosophy is perverse because it attributes malice to those who have none. It fosters policies that actively discriminate, supposedly in order to alleviate unproven discrimination. Kendi himself explains, the defining question is whether the discrimination is creating equity or inequity. If discrimination is creating equity, then it is anti-racist. If discrimination is creating inequity, then it is racist. Unfortunately, this idiotic and perverse philosophy has become the root of Biden administration policymaking. equity has been used as the key word from environmental to economic to COVID-19 policy. Susan Rice, Biden's domestic policy advisor, explained this week, "We're focused on racial justice and equity. It's for everybody who has not had the benefits of a system that has not served everybody. This is not about serving one group to the detriment of another. This, of course, is a lie. It is utterly about group equality, which requires individual injustice. America was rooted in equality and freedom. Equity requires freedom to be curbed. It's therefore a national tragedy to watch equality of rights abandoned in favor of equity. If freedom is discarded to achieve equality of outcome, we no longer live in an America defined by the Declaration of Independence. We live in an America defined by tribalism and leveling, and in short order, tyranny." Obituaries and death notices. Steve Lemuel Holofield Sr., beloved husband, loving father, and adored grandfather, passed into eternal rest and peace with his Lord on Sunday, January 31st in Laurel, Mississippi. The funeral service will be held Friday at 11 a.m. at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Ken Lester passed peacefully into his heavenly home on January 28th. A graveside service and interment are at Lakeland Hills Memorial Park in Burnet, Texas, on Friday, February 5th at 2 p.m. For donations in Kent's memory, please consider the American Cancer Society. Daniel Dominguez Jr., age 38, of Midland, passed away on January 11th. Cremation services have been arranged with burial in Chihuahua, Mexico. Arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Donna Bolton Tyson of Midland passed away peacefully at her residence on January 25th. Geneva McKierney White passed from this life on Tuesday, February the 2nd. Private graveside services will be held at the Richland Springs Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Edward Cackle died on Sunday, January 24th, from complications from COVID-19. Visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Tuesday, February 9th, from 5 to 7 p.m. A rosary at 6 p.m. Graveside burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Wednesday, February 10th, at 3 p.m. Dolores June Richmond, 86, of Midland, passed from this life on January 30th. There are no services scheduled at this time. Joe Kruger Turner, 73, of Odessa, passed from this life on January 28th. There are no services scheduled at this time. Nancy Milner, 78, of Midland, passed away February 3rd. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, February 8th, at the First Baptist Church Sanctuary in Midland. Private family burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, February 5th, 2021. Section A. Mass effort continues next week. More than 13,000 have been vaccinated at Ratliff. The mass vaccination effort at Ratliff Stadium is over for this week as health officials report that more than 13,000 have been vaccinated in the joint local effort. The clinic will continue next week starting on Wednesday for those seeking the first of two Pfizer COVID-19 vaccinations. Health officials stressed not to go to Ratliff seeking a second shot, as those will be scheduled after February 14th at local urgent cares and not at Ratliff Stadium. It is still best to register online prior to getting in line at Ratliff, as it will cut wait time. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Abbott-Timmons, during a Thursday Zoom news conference, stressed that Ratliff is for the first shot, not for the second. She said information on how those who have already received the first dose will get the second dose will be released Monday. She said the second shots will be at urgent cares and that no one will have to wait in a crowded area and that all precautions will be taken to keep patients safe and adhere to social distancing. Odessa Regional Medical Center's Chief Medical Officer Rohith Saravanan explained that the Pfizer vaccine second dose is meant to be administered 17 to 21 days following the first dose. The Moderna second vaccine is meant to be administered 28 to 34 days after the first shot. Saravanan explained that guidance from the CDC details that a second dose can be administered up to 42 days after the first shot and still be effective. The Ratliff Clinic has only used Pfizer shots so far, and Timmons explained that due to the mass production by Pfizer, that it seems to be the most readily available. Saravanan also addressed when full immunity happens following the second dose. About a week to 2 weeks after the second dose, he said, adding that immunity is personal and that even after that occurs, that social distancing and masks are still needed to protect others who are not immune. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin praised the volunteers at Ratliff and also the continuing work of State Representative Brooks Landgraf in helping secure the vaccines for the mass hub at Ratliff. He also said that MCH employees who chose to be vaccinated have almost all had the second dose. He reported Thursday that there were 16 employees out on COVID protocol and 45 patients at MCH, with 21 in critical care and 19 on ventilators. He said they have requested 5,000 more vaccines per week on top of the 3,900 they are currently getting. At ORMC, there were 23 patients on Thursday, with 13 in ICU and 5 on ventilators. Saravanan said the Odessa positivity rate is slowly coming down and is between 25% and 30%. We need to keep going in that same direction and keep this thing controlled. We are doing a good job as a community. Let's keep at it for now. Tippin did say the weather could be a factor next week at Ratliff and urged Odessans to keep an eye on it and to follow MCH's social media as well as local media for updates. The Ratliff Clinic on Thursday did about 1,750 vaccinations, and there will not be a drive-through clinic today. Here is next week's schedule. Wednesday, February 10th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday, February 11th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday, February 12th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Timmons praised the volunteers and overwhelming support from the community. She said ORMC nurses volunteered on the recovery side of the clinic and that there were so many volunteers at some points that they had to send some home. Our teams worked seamlessly. Chef Alejandro Eager to Start New Venture by Royal McGregor. Prior to taking over the building where the barbecue barn had been located, Curbside Bistro co-owner Chef Alejandro Barrientos kicked around a few ideas of what would replace it. At first, he thought about making it into a New York-style pizzeria. Then he thought he would solely sell chicken wings, which is Curbside Bistro's specialty on Wednesdays. Chef Alejandro also mulled the idea of taking his own spin on a Mexican restaurant. However, one thing was for sure. He knew he wasn't going to serve barbecue. When people found out we were taking over, they thought we were taking over the barbecue place, he said. People didn't know we were transitioning to something completely different. The only remnant left of the former barbecue barn is the barn-like facade. Chef Alejandro decided he was going to implement a drive-through convenience store and name it the Beer Barn. The Beer Barn held a soft opening Thursday as employees continued to stock shelves and coolers with beer, energy drinks, and other beverages. I get that excitement from seeing other small mom-and-pop shops doing well, Chef Alejandro said. Seeing their growth and their expansion, it fuels me too. It gives me motivation to keep doing things. The Beer Barn will be open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., Sunday to Wednesday, 11 a.m. to midnight Thursday and Friday, and 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Saturday. Chef Alejandro said he will run 3 shifts a day with 2 people working at a time. The Beer Barn will concentrate on beer sales and micheladas, with Chef Alejandro's twist of adding a piece of beer jerky in it. My biggest thing is creating jobs for my friends and family, he said. That's one thing that I've always been very happy to do, is provide jobs. Initially, the Beer Barn won't implement food service for a couple of months. Chef Alejandro explained there isn't cooking equipment inside the establishment. He said he wants to start with the foundation of the beer and micheladas sales and then expand to food. It's just me and my wife, Chef Alejandro said. We don't have any investors. We don't have any partners. I want to build a good foundation and get clientele. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 3 staff. U.S. cases, 26,277,125 total confirmed, and 445,264 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Vaccines. Odessa Regional Medical Center is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. Please check on vaccine availability. Call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/Y3JQHZ89. As usual, the Ratliff Stadium vaccines will be ongoing. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB is prepared to receive new allotments of COVID-19 vaccine at any time from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. To sign up or for more information, visit vaccine.heb.com. COVID-19 vaccines. CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores based on local eligibility guidelines. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y508QJE4. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. For updates, visit tinyurl.com/Y5K95KZN. Local news roundup. Benefit. The Hope Wins Banquet benefiting Jesus House Women and Children's Center will feature Michael Jr. and music by Erica Lane at 7 p.m. February 12th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th. Silent auction will be included. Check out Valentine's Day packages overnight at Hotel Stay at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, Roses and More. For tickets or information, visit JesusHouseOdessa.com. or email shirley@jesushouseodessa.com. Exhibit. World War II Heroes, featuring 31 portraits of the men and women who served in the armed forces during World War II through March 25th at the Museum of the Big Bend in Alpine. Photographer Zach Coco has a great appreciation for and a connection with our nation's military heroes. His grandfather was a WW2 veteran. Biographies for the portraits can be viewed on cell phones by use of a QR code on labels next to each portrait. Gallery guides will be available as well. Museum hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. The museum is located on the campus of Sul Ross State University, entrance number 4. For more information, visit museumofthebigbend.com or call 432-837-8143. Focused Care offering antibody infusion. Focused Care at Odessa is offering an antibody infusion treatment to residents who are positive for the virus, early in the symptom stage, and interested in benefiting from the medication allowed by the FDA through an emergency use authorization, EUA. Focused Care is heartened to offer this medication to our COVID-positive residents that is designed to ameliorate harsh symptoms of the virus that can wreak havoc on the immune systems of seniors who can be disproportionately impacted. Mark McKenzie, founder and CEO of Focused Post-Acute Care Partners, FPACP, in a news release. FPACP has 31 long-term care communities located mostly in East and West Texas. This innovative therapy, along with testing and vaccines, is an effective part of the arsenal combating the pandemic and can reduce hospitalizations and emergency room visits, McKenzie said in the release. The IV infusion is a monoclonal antibody treatment developed by Eli Lilly called bamlanivimab. Antibodies are proteins that our bodies make to fight viruses, such as the virus that causes COVID-19. Monoclonal antibodies, as opposed to those naturally produced when our bodies come in contact with a virus, are made in a laboratory and act similarly to natural antibodies to limit the amount of virus in people's bodies. The infusion therapy is for people who have tested positive for COVID-19 and have mild to moderate symptoms 7 to 10 days into infection. The one-time infusion is approximately an hour in length, followed by an hour of patient monitoring. Both Focused Care pharmacy partners, Pharmerica and PharmScript, are supplying the treatment to the long-term care community. Focused Care at Odessa clinicians are providing the treatment and monitoring post-infusion patients. Focused Care at Baytown, a COVID-19-only building, was first to offer the antibody infusion to positive residents who meet the criteria. Focused Care will continue to roll out access to the treatment on-site in its other long-term care communities, including tomorrow at Focused Care at Crane. The science community, and frankly all of us, have continued to learn more about this virus and how to manage it as we make our way into the second year of the pandemic, McKenzie stated. With all the concerns about testing access, new variants, and vaccine supply, it is encouraging to have effective therapies that can reduce the severity of illness caused by the virus, alleviate the stress of hospital capacity, and most importantly, save lives. Man charged in fatal shooting. A 36-year-old man has been arrested after he reportedly fatally shot a 38-year-old man in North Odessa. Clinton Tyrone Saunders was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. The Odessa Police Department responded to a shots-fired call around 1:35 a.m. Thursday in the 9,000 block of Ratliff Ridge Avenue, a press release detailed. Officers found 38-year-old Mario Castillo dead in the 1,000 block of East 90th. Investigation reportedly showed that Saunders shot Castillo after a disturbance occurred. Saunders was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. No bond has been set as of early Thursday afternoon, jail records show. Next of kin have been notified, and the investigation continues. Incumbent files for OC board. In the run-up to the May 1st Odessa College and Ector County ISD Board of Trustees election, J.E. Coach Presley, place 4, has filed for his spot on the Odessa College Board of Trustees. Two fellow incumbent members of the Odessa College Board have filed for re-election. Vice President Gary Johnson for place 7 and Secretary Larry Johnson, place 5. The filing period started January 13th and runs to February 12th, the Secretary of State's website says. Early voting is from April 19th through April 27th. Those interested in the OC board should file with the office of Ken Zartner, Vice President for Administrative Services at Odessa College. Phone 432-335-6701. Four incumbents have filed for the Ector County Independent School District Board of Trustees. Hours for ECISD are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Those who have filed are Secretary Steve Brown, Trustee Nelson Minyard, President Delma Abalos, and Trustee Chris Stanley. Brown represents position 5, Stanley position 4, Minyard position 7, and Abalos position 2. Those interested can mail the applications to Cynthia McNabb, Post Office Box 3912, Odessa, 79760-3912, or email to cynthia.mcnabb@ectorcountyisd.org, or fax to 432-456-9878. People can come to the administration building physically to fill out an application at 802 North Sam Houston. More information may be found on the ECISD website. Drilling Super Pursues Degree. Special to the Odessa American by Rebecca Bell, MC Executive Director, Institutional Advancement. Midland. Joseph Vaughn, 33, works full-time and is a family man. Even with his busy schedule, Vaughn is committed to completing a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering. As a drilling superintendent for Patterson UTI, he said that a degree will enable him to move up in the company. I've been with Patterson for over 13 years, Vaughn explained. I started when I was 20, working as an entry-level floor hand, and I've moved up the career ladder ever since. 4 years ago, I was promoted to drilling superintendent over the Permian Basin. I felt that pursuing my degree would be helpful in my efforts to continue moving up within Patterson. Also, I really love working in the oil and gas industry and love the field work. I've always wanted to use my field knowledge and college education to become a well-rounded and respected petroleum engineer. I constantly encourage the employees whom I supervise to pursue a similar path of higher education to better their career opportunities. Vaughn is currently responsible for several of the Patterson's rigs in the Permian Basin, covering the area from Midland to Carlsbad, New Mexico. He has managed some of the largest operators in the United States. He works 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off and claims Austin as his home. When he is in the Permian Basin, Patterson provides lodging for him around the areas in which his rigs are located. It's not a typical job, but it works for my family and me, Vaughn said. I first started working for Patterson in the South Texas area for 9.5 years before transferring to the Permian Basin to become a drilling superintendent for the last 4 years. Vaughn said that when he began researching higher education opportunities, he reached out to the engineering department at MC, and within hours of his initial inquiry, Brian Flowers, Midland College Henry Chair of Engineering, contacted him. Flowers was very professional and told me about options for getting started in engineering at Midland College, Vaughn stated. I was also impressed by the number of online courses I could take so that my work schedule wouldn't be interrupted and I could be home with my family in Austin. As an added bonus, Vaughn said that when he told Patterson, UTI Senior Vice President Mike Garvin and Regional Vice President Brandon Benedict that he was going to pursue a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering, they consistently worked with him to ensure he was able to fulfill both his work and school obligations. I was truly grateful for their support and willingness to invest in me, Vaughn noted. It's every employee's dream to have supervisors who take care of their employees. I also can't thank my operations manager, Kurt Bailey, enough for helping me balance my work obligations and studying without any problems. I started taking classes in fall 2018 and just took one or two courses that first semester. I wanted to make sure that I could juggle school, job, and family responsibilities. Vaughn has certainly proven that he can do it the right way. He obtained an Associate of Science degree from MC in December and graduated as an honors scholar with a GPA over 3.85. It was important for me to do as well as I could because I knew that my operations manager and vice presidents were supporting my dreams, Vaughn said. My plans are to transfer to the University of Texas Permian Basin or Texas Tech to finish my degree and then work on getting a master's degree. I was really fortunate at Midland College that I could actually take all my courses online. I have a great advising team at Midland College to thank for that. My advisor knew that I needed as many online courses as possible. She contacted me last spring and told me that all summer lab courses would be offered online because of the pandemic. So I enrolled in a summer chemistry course and two summer geology courses. Those were tough courses, but I got through them all with A's. As an honors scholar, Vaughn was required to complete additional research projects in at least four classes. He chose Texas government, geology, humanities, and music appreciation. Then, his last semester at Midland College, he took a U.S. history course with David Hopkins. Hopkins is a great teacher, Vaughn said. His lectures relate history to what's going on in today's world. He inspired me to complete an additional honors research project in history, which made my fifth honors credit possible. In addition to taking classes online, Vaughn also took advantage of the online services provided by the college's math lab. I hadn't had a math course since I was in high school, Vaughn said. I appreciated the online tutoring services available through the math lab. I also had to get a private tutor when I moved up into calculus. All that extra math studying was worth it. My last semester, I got an A in calculus. Vaughn stated that he wants to inspire other oil field employees to follow the route he has taken, even with the abnormal schedules that they work in the field. It is possible to get a degree and work full-time, Vaughn said. You just have to find time to manage your job, home life, and study life. Invest in yourself so that others want to invest in you as well. Obituaries and death notices for Friday, February 5th. Molly Hensley. Molly Louise Snyder was born March 31st, 1946 in Canton, Pennsylvania. She married Claude Edgar Ed Pullen. And he passed away in 1984. She later married John Hensley, whom she remained with until her death. Molly is survived by her husband, John Hensley, three daughters, Tammy Leva of Odessa, Craig and Kimberly Davis of Palm Springs, California, and Melissa Underwood of Odessa, along with numerous grandchildren, her stepchildren, Joe and Shannon Lopez of Santa Ana, Thelma Bobskill of Santa Ana, Richard and Stacy Hensley of Coleman, and John and Tina Hensley Jr. of Coleman, as well as many step-grandchildren and great-grandchildren. There will be a memorial service at West Odessa Baptist Church Saturday, February 6th at 1 p.m. with Pastor Matt Jones presiding. Justin Chance Payne. Justin Chance Payne, 33, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, February 3rd. He was born December 12, 1987, in Odessa to Everett Parker Payne and Tambra Lynn Miller. He is survived by his son, James Payne of Comanche, his father, Everett Parker Payne of Lubbock, brothers Nick Payne and wife Joanna of Midland, Clinton Payne and Chad Payne, both of Odessa, and a sister, Casey Alexander, and her husband, Randy. He was preceded in death by his mother, Tambra Lynn Miller. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 6th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Glinda Urias Bitolas. Glinda Urias Bitolas, 65, of Odessa, died Monday, February 1st. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 6th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Arrangements by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Bobby Delois Brown. Bobby Delois Brown, 89, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 3rd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Maria Moya. Maria Moya, 78, of Odessa, died Friday, January 22nd. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. February 5th at Impact City Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery with Augustine Martinez officiating. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home of Midland. Justin Rene Munoz. Justin Rene Munoz, 46, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 17th. Funeral services were held Friday, February 5th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel, and burial followed at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Father Joseph Icker officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Dolores June Hickman Richmond. Dolores June Hickman Richmond, 86, died Saturday, January 30th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Mary Lou Shaw, 94, of Odessa, died Friday, January 29th. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, February 8th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Funeral services will follow at 11 a.m. at First Methodist Church. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Joe Kruger Turner. Joe Kruger Turner, 73, died Thursday, January 28th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Elvira Zarate. Elvira Zarate, 71, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 3rd. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.